Right, my name is Chris Bradley. I'm joined by Will Stewart. You're listening to the Run For It podcast.
Good morning.
Where to begin? Yeah. How's it going, Will?
Not great. I'm quite a one-dimensional guy, I've come to realise, and I've not been running for 3 weeks now, so I'm not really too sure what we're going to talk about. It'll be good to talk to our guest, but I'm not sure what to talk about from my perspective. Yes, so 3 weeks, no running, caught COVID, defeated COVID, and recovering from, well, hopefully defeated COVID, and recovering from COVID as we speak, so not great at all.
And that's Lakeland off the calendar now, is it?
Yep.
Yeah, too big a...
Yeah, I'm off to work tomorrow and was meant to be going down to do a 50-mile section of the course and just, you know...
Not a chance.
Not a chance, yeah. And then I've got some time off at the start of July. Again, had recce's planned and stuff like that, but yeah, just... I was excited when my coach emailed me saying, oh, do you think you'll manage an easy 30-minute jog on the flat on Sunday? So this coming Sunday. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, my sympathies. That's brutal. You'd put a lot into that. And
yeah. You kind of fell by the sword as well, did you not?
Yeah. So a week before... South Downs Way, was feeling pretty good, went out for a 10-mile run just around Arthur's Seat, taking it super easy, was really kind of holding back as well, but I was running pretty fast on the trails, felt super good. Later that day, had a bit of a headache, thought, oh, maybe I've caught a bit of heat exhaustion, was pretty convinced that what it was, had a headache the next day at work, felt a bit rough, but thought, oh, just heat exhaustion, I'll shake it off after a couple of days. Stuck with me, and then I think what it was, I had like stomach flu, but when like it's in the post, you're quite dehydrated anyway, so I think that made me a bit susceptible. And then just a really unpleasant sort of week and a half afterwards, I think on the maybe Wednesday or Thursday, I kind of called it and put my crew out of their misery and just said, look, this probably isn't going to happen. I think on Thursday night, I had it in my head, like, if I feel good tomorrow, I'll just jump on the train down to Winchester, maybe it'll all come together, but nah. And then I went for a run on Sunday, the day after the race. Well, the race was, or would have been for me. Yeah, it's a good job I didn't go down. It's just sort of slowly waiting for fitness to come back.
Yeah, a bit of a struggle.
Just, you couldn't make up that kind of timing.
Yeah, you can't think of worst possible timing, I guess. You know, I think... everything had gone to plan in training, or more or less gone to plan in training, you know, taper's going well, and yeah, you then get sick, and the week before the race, it's pretty grim, pretty brutal.
It's, yeah, you know, six months of looking at a singular goal, almost 10-hour weeks, but, you know, I was sad at the time, but, you know, I've entered a ton of races for the rest of the year, so.
Are you back running now, then?
Yeah, I'm back running now, like, it's not great. I mean, I'm managing to get out for like 10 miles on the trails. I've got theoretically a 17 miler in the Lomond Hills planned on Saturday, but it's just, even on the easy runs, it's just see a massive gap where the fitness has gone.
Yeah. So I guess moving on from our running woes and illness and whatnot, I think what I am pretty excited about is Western States this weekend. Kind of the holy grail of trail, and yeah, every time it comes around, you know, I think you get pretty excited with the field and the, you know, the caliber of people that line up every year is just it's brilliant. You know, I think for me it almost pips the competitive field is better at UTMB more consistently than it is at UTMB. And yeah,
sorry, what which one are you saying is more competitive?
Western States,
right, gotcha.
Yeah, so, yeah, pretty excited for that, and, yeah, I've been following the videos and, yeah, the favourites and stuff like that, so I'm going to go out there and go for Beth Pascal to win the female race in a new course record, and I am going to go with Jared Hazen to take the win. It's pretty hard to overlook Jim Walmsley.
Well, I don't know if you've been on his Instagram, but I think he had some injuries, so he's been on the bike a lot, but he reckons it's coming together. He reckons it's coming together just now. I think it's so hard to write him off, because I think now he's got the experience. He's gotten it wrong so many times. I think it's hard to write him out. I fully think Beth Pascal will win, but I think, is it Ellie Greenwood who's got the female course record?
Yeah.
I mean, that was 2012, which was a very cool year, and I think it's meant to be a hot one on Saturday, mm-hmm. by all accounts. So I do think that's going to be a push, but I do think Beth Pascal will win. Like, she's looked phenomenal this year, and the fact that she's actually been able to take the time and go and train on, like, out there and have the break from work, I fully expect that. On the men's side of it, I just want to see Erik Sentimen get in the top 10 men. Jared Hazen's not had the most amazing kind of results, so I don't know about Jared for the win.
I don't know. It's just his interview. He was saying pretty much since February, he's just put all his chips on the table for Western States. I just think he's gone all in, and you know, he's not a million miles behind Jim in the 2019 race. 20 minutes. Well, less than 20 minutes, but you know, it's like, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how Jim runs it now that he's pretty much just a cyclist that sells Wahoo stuff on Instagram. But,
that's a gross oversimplification.
I'm just not sure how it'll translate into, you know, fast running for 14 hours.
Actually, you know what? My pick for the win, Tim Tollefson, 2:18 marathon speed, which is only 3 minutes slower than Jim, and two third places at UTMB. He's had a second at CCC. He's very, very consistent. I think Tim Tollefson's a shout for the win, to be honest. I don't know why you're grimacing. That's a solid on the money bet.
I think if the winning time's going to be plus 15 hours, then yeah, he'll be up there. I don't know if he's the kind of guy that will run sub 14:30.
Maybe not sub 14:30, but I do think he can go sub 15. I think he's got the raw speed to do it. But if it's a hot day and it's, you know, the chips get it turns into a tough tactical race. I think he's got the combination of relative youth and just the mental approach to, like, make the adjustments and kind of, like, bring it home. But I wouldn't be surprised if he could win a fast race too.
I would be more surprised, I think, than you. But yeah, no, it'll be great to see how it materializes and pans out to see who takes home the Cougar Trophy.
Should be. I think providing footage? Is there not, like, full coverage of it as well this year?
Oh, is there? I'm not too sure about that. Hopefully.
I think so. Yeah, like the way they've been doing with, like, they did it with I think they did it with Canyons, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Or one of the other golden ticket races, I remember. So should be able to, like, go on and watch that throughout the day, hopefully. Let's talk about our guest today, Jason Kelly.
Man, Jason's rise through the ranks has been pretty phenomenal, to be honest. I remember, so I used to work in the Aberdeen shop, and I knew his mum and his dad used to be quite frequent customers, and his mum used to come in quite frequently for shoes and stuff, and was serving her. So we were chatting away, and one day she came in and said, "Oh, my son's." Son's thinking about a job. You know, at the time, I think he was working in hospitality. You know, at that moment in time, I didn't know anything about him. I knew them and through Stonehaven Running Club, I knew them a little bit as a family, but I didn't really know much about Jason at all. Interviewed really well, got the job, and I think he's just been a victim of the Run For It culture and just been sucked into a real focus. Because I think what it does is it focuses your life around running. Your work and your play becomes running. And, you know, I think you fast forward, I think it's, I need to double check with him, but I think in the space of 4 years that he's been with the company, yeah, it's been a stratospheric rise through the ranks, you know, and gone from a decent recreational runner to, you know, being our most recently capped Scottish vest wearer. So, yeah, he recently got selected for the ACP team, Anglo-Celtic Plate, for representing Scotland, which will be, yeah, it's just, yeah, phenomenal. But, I mean, he's chucking out half marathons in 72 minutes and stuff like that, and it's just... For it seems to have come from nowhere in quite a short space of time, but when you look at it and his approach to training, it'll be great to speak to him. But it's been built steady, but the pace of it ranking up, you know, I think he benefits from age being on his side and still being pretty young, but he's pretty quickly racked up a ton of miles very consistently, and you know, he's reaping the rewards for it. So it's yeah, it's great to see. He's got quite a ruthless race approach as well. You know, I think he's gung ho. You know,
just seems to be every month at least. Just seems to have found some race. He'll rock up. I'm pretty sure it was just non-stop podiums.
Yeah, I think for me the first time, you know, I obviously saw his road times getting really good, but when the manner in which he ran D33 in 2019, I think it was 2019, was unbelievable. You know, he's running, I think he ran this the closing marathon, so it's 33 miles in total, which is what, 56k his marathon split, but from the end back the way was something like, I'm sure it was like 240, maybe quicker than that.
Damn.
It was like, I mean, he was dropping it hard, you know, the hammer was down. So there's negative splitting and there's Jason Kelly's negative splitting. So yeah, it's pretty inspiring, to be honest. But yeah, it'll be good to see how his training's been going, and yeah, see how his plans materialising for ACP.
Yeah, definitely got some questions for him to find out how he. So just see, I don't know, just from a work perspective. Obviously, he works over at the Aberdeen store. Just from a work perspective, it just looks like. You look at Strava and you just think, apart from working and running, I'm not 100% sure what he's up to.
Yeah. Like,
right, without, I mean, we and Will haven't got too much more to add, so let's get Jason Kelly on now. Jason Kelly, welcome to the Run For It podcast. How are you getting on today?
Thanks very much. I'm doing well, Chris. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm getting better. Been a bit ill and staying in an Airbnb while my flat gets ripped apart. So it's a bit chaotic here, but I'm okay. I'm good. So how's your training going just now?
It's going really well at the moment. Yeah, been just kind of up in the mileage again the last couple of weeks. Had a race a couple of weeks ago, so easy week after that. I'm now just getting into. What's going to be, I think, a pretty brutal 8 week of the block.
How is that 8 weeks, and then how long's your taper before the Anglo-Celtic Plate?
I'll be a couple of weeks taper.
Yeah, cool. So I guess let's start at kind of the beginning of your story. Like, what was your start in running, and what hooked you into it?
Yeah, I started running at the start of 2016. I was 20 at the time, and basically, because I was unfit, overweight, and a bit miserable, to put it bluntly. Yeah, just kind of decided, nah, something needs to change here. Need to kind of get life in gear a little bit more. And I'd seen, in the last few days of the previous year, 2015, I'd seen a random news piece on TV about someone who was running 1,000 kilometres in the calendar year of 2016 for charity. And kind of competitive brain immediately kicked in when I heard that, and I thought, yeah, I could probably do that. And that was kind of it from there. That's how it took off, and it's just gone up and up since then, really.
How did that timing wise coincide with when you started working with Run For It?
I started with Run For It October, I think, 2017.
Okay.
So that would have been 19, 20 months before that.
Yes. Did you hit the 1,000 kilometres in that?
I ended up, I think I hit it in about August or September that year. Oh, nice. Ended up doing about 1,700 kilometers that year, or just over 1,000 miles. So yeah, I'd kind of worked it out as, I think it's like 2.7 kilometers a day or something like that to get 1,000 for the year. And I just thought, yeah, I could probably do that if I gave it a go.
And just, I guess, just for a bit of relatability, because obviously you're where you are now, but the first sort of few runs, what were they? I mean, were they quite difficult? Like, how far were they? Were you able to run the whole way? Like, what was...
They were awful. I was doing, for the first probably 2 or 3 months, found it quite difficult to even get to 5K. It got obviously improved as the fitness built after that, but I don't think I really enjoyed running for a good 9 or 10 months.
That shows some real stubbornness.
Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard to start off with. And as I'm sure everyone does, you're getting a few niggles here and there because your body's not used to it and it's frustrating and you're a bit stop start. But yeah, persevering through that was, I mean, definitely the hardest part of the whole running journey I've had since then.
And did you get many kind of injuries at the start? Like, what was anything major, or were you able to just kind of run through everything?
Nothing really major. It was just the usual kind of shin splint niggles just kept cropping up. I think that the kind of personality I've got is definitely quite addictive in some on some level. So I was always just trying to do probably too much too soon, and it just kept coming back, getting shin niggles. I'd ease off, they'd get better, and I'd go, oh, I'm fine now, I can ramp it up again. But yeah, it doesn't quite work like that.
Yeah, and then so how did that kind of, to use your own words, like, get so out of hand? Like, what, when did you start to take things like kind of really seriously and sort of get your eyes on being competitive?
I think after that 9 or 10 month period where I really didn't enjoy it and it was just really, really difficult, it was all, I think it was quite a quick kind of change, almost like the flick of a switch. All of a sudden something changed and it just became easier, and I started just absolutely loving running. And that was then. I wasn't running long distances, I wasn't running particularly fast, but it was just that change in mindset from I actually don't like this to this is something that I really, really love and I'm passionate about. And then throughout 2017, which would have been my second year of running, then the time started really coming down a bit, and obviously that fuels your motivation just even further. And I just have absolutely loved running since then.
I guess it's quite a hard sell to say to somebody that, you know, start this sport or start this hobby, for the first 10 months you'll not like it that much, it's quite hard and you'll find it very challenging and difficult, but only then afterwards you might sort of transition through into that real passion and sort of, like you say, addiction for really enjoying it. You know, I think it's overcoming that barrier is quite difficult, but I think, you know, to chunk up that first 9-10 months, you can form habits within sort of 3 or 4 weeks. And I think if you're first starting out and you're building habits, you know, get into good routines, get into good practices, and even if you're not really enjoying it for that the following 6 months, that habit will carry you. And like you say, once that switch flicks, then you're kind of sucked into the running world. I was saying to Chris in the intro, I was like, because when you first started at Run For It, I knew you were running and you were getting a lot of PBs at that time from a pretty low starting point. But then from 2018 onwards, you know, the times just kept falling at what felt like the same rate, which is, you know, pretty awesome to see. And it's just kind of that trajectory has continued. But it's quite funny listening to saying, well, your starting point was just to get 1,000 kilometers in a year, because you're probably doing that, what, in 2 months now? Are you 2 or 3 months?
Yeah, yeah. I actually just had a check this morning, and so we're not quite at the halfway point of the year at time of recording, and I've just hit 4,000 kilometers. So yeah, it's quite a difference now to a few years ago, that's for sure.
That's massive.
I'm curious, Jason, during those first couple of years, I know you started to really enjoy the running, but were you kind of doing the classic kind of goal setting of, oh, I want a sub 40 10K, I want a sub 90 half, or were things just kind of going almost a bit too quick? Like, what? I'm just curious.
I was definitely setting those targets. The first year, I was always kind of mid-pack in local 10Ks and things. I think I did 1 or 2 half marathons that year. The second full year in 2017, when the times really started coming down, I was running on average about 10 minutes faster at like the same 10Ks as the year before. And that was quite, that was a nice bit of motivation just to get that, that kind of benchmark of, can I run this race 10 minutes or more faster than I did last year? And then when I was starting to, and I was starting to kind of hit like lower 40 minutes for 10K, then, you know, as you said, that, that 40 minute benchmark becomes really appealing and just really makes you want to train a bit harder, train a bit more and go after it.
Were you kind of structuring your approach, or were you just going out and doing things hard until it got easy? Or were you looking at, were you joining a club? Like, what was the progression like in terms of getting a bit of structure?
At that point in the first couple of years, I was just going and running on feel. There was no structure or anything to like a training plan. For about, I think at least a year, I didn't even run with a watch. I was just going out and doing a known route and just running it on feel. Then I did join a club. I think it was the end of 2017. I joined Stonehaven Running Club, which was my first club. And that made a huge difference. Just other people to train with who were much better than you. Some of them was just so helpful to just try and drag me on a little bit.
What have you kind of like implemented any kind of special diets or like strength training or supplementary stuff? Like, what have you brought in anything to kind of aid your running, like around your running? Because from where I'm sitting, like, you know, 200 odd miles away, kind of speaking on the phone and watching your Strava, it just looks like you're just banging out crazy mileage. But I mean, what are the things are you doing to kind of support that, if anything?
I'm somewhat embarrassed a little bit to say nothing at all. I don't do any strength training. I don't do any really stretching or anything like that. If I've got a little bit of a niggle, I might, you know, get the foam roller out a couple of days a week until that's gone away. But really nothing other than that. In terms of diet, nothing specific really either. You know, I still enjoy a pizza and a beer, and I don't really watch what I eat particularly. I think kind of naturally, I do seem to be able to recover pretty well from hard efforts or long runs. And I think that's really, really fortunate for me to be in that situation. And I just make the most of that as best I can.
So no major learnings to take away from there, just a bit of luck by the sounds of it.
A bit, if you can recover well, that's half the battle, yeah. Really. I think like strength training in particular is definitely something that I think I probably will implement at some point. But my sort of philosophy at the moment is, whilst I'm still improving, doing what I'm doing, just keep at it and don't try and change too much.
What is your structure to a week? Excuse me. What is your approach to a week or for running in terms of structure or how you put together sessions and stuff like that? How do you put it all together?
At the moment, generally I'll try and do one hard session a week, whether it's intervals or a tempo run, something like that. Occasionally two, but more often than not, that's just once a week. And then I'll aim for one long run a week as well. And the distance of that long run will be dependent really on what race I'm targeting. So at the moment for the 100K, I'm going to be building up to about sort of 60 to 65 kilometers for a long run. So about that 40 mile mark. And then a couple of like 50Ks, 31 odd miles.
Yeah.
And that's 60K long run. Are you kind of doing that at kind of like a specific kind of race pace in mind, or are you going a little bit easier? Like, what's, is it a time on feet, or are you looking for the right intensity?
I think with a 60 to 65K, I think I'll try and do twice in this block for the 100K. And one of those will be just easy paced, going slowly, comfortable, and just time on feet type effort. And then the other one, I think I'll try and do it as at least 50K of that at target 100K pace, possibly even as much as 60K. But the thing with a race of that distance, 100 kilometers, is your target pace for that is going to be much, much closer to easy than it is to tempo. Mm. So you can do that extended like section of a long run at that pace, and it's not going to take too much out of you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're running for 60K and you're maybe doing two 20K efforts, and that's maybe picking it up to don't know, if you're aiming for 4 minute kilometers for 100k and you do 2 times 20k blocks at 3:50s and then the rest is at 4:20s or something like that, just to, you know, polarize it a little bit, but you purposely add in a chunk of faster running through that 60k run. Yeah.
Just on the Anglo-Celtic plate, actually, because I've not spoken too much about it. Just for the listeners, Jason, like, just explain what the Anglo kind of Celtic plate is and what kind of elevation profile you're looking at for it.
Yeah, the Anglo-Celtic plate is, it's an annual home countries international. So you've got teams from England, Scotland, Ireland, Northern Ireland and Wales. And it usually also incorporates the British 100K championships. So year on year, the location rotates between Wales, England, Scotland, Ireland. It's going to be just outside of Dublin this year. And it's basically set up to be a really, really fast 100K route. So it's all on tarmac. The elevation is going to be pretty much zero, more or less. So just designed to really get some times on the board, really.
Damn. Is all your training in this block kind of on concrete, pretty much? Or
pretty much, yeah. I would say the one downside that I've been a little bit frustrated about, but well worth it in the end, is that I'm not really going to get a summer of being able to go out in the hills just because I'm going to be just pounding the tarmac for the next couple of months. I'll maybe have to squeeze in some mountain days out after the race.
Yeah.
If you are, depending on your recovery, eh?
Yeah.
What were your kind of like breakthrough performances kind of when you thought, okay, I could start targeting a Scotland vest and looking at the Anglo-Celtic plate? Like, what was your first result that was like, oh, that's on the board?
Yeah, ultras really weren't on my radar much or at all until the end of 2019. So fairly recently. And I did a race called the Nocturnal Ultra, which I think was the start of December 2019. That was basically a 6-hour timed race around a 5K loop. Basically, it's based on whoever runs the farthest distance or the most number of loops in that 6 hours is the winner. And I thought, that sounds quite interesting, just for something a little bit different. So I went down, that was in East Lothian. I went down and I raced that, and I managed to come away with a win and a course record there. And after that, I sort of thought, maybe I'm actually comparatively a bit better at this longer distance stuff. And that's really what put long distance running on my radar a lot more. And then fast forward to March in 2020, there's a race called the D33, which is from Aberdeen to Bankery on the old Deeside railway line, turn around in Bankery and run back, which is 33 miles or 53 kilometers. And there was a couple of guys I'd seen were entered for that who had been picked for Scotland for the Anglo-Celtic plate in 2020. And I thought, it might be interesting to just go and do that and just see how I shape up against these guys. And that, I think, was probably the best race I've had in my life to date. I ended up winning that race in the second fastest time in its 10-year history. And I beat both those guys who had been picked for Scotland. And that was the point I thought, this might be on.
Yeah, I think that was, that's the race I called out in the intro as well, because that was when it wasn't, you know, I know that the guys that were in the ACP that year were running it, but even sort of disregarding who you're running against, it was the manner in which you ran that 33-mile race that I was like, oh, damn, this guy's onto something, you know, and got very, very fast potential and running in the legs over longer distances, you know, whether it's 50K or upwards. You know, to what was your split again? I was trying to remember your marathon split in the second portion of that race, but you know, your times and the pace you ran at was like a runaway train almost, in that you know, starting pretty sensibly, but then
yeah, you know, it wasn't just... I hit the marathon split from the start of the race to the marathon point in 2:42, I think it was. But my marathon split from whatever distance, about 11 kilometers into the finish, was 2:35. So it was quite a big negative split. And honestly, that surprised me, I think, as much as it surprised anyone else. I just felt really, really good in the second half of that race. And as I was picking it up, I was thinking, I'm running quite quick here, but I feel like I can sustain this. Yeah. So why not just give a little bit more?
Yeah.
And I just, yeah, I just kept picking it up and kept picking it up a little bit. And I think the closing 10K was just over 35 minutes. And even I thought for that, for a 50 plus kilometer race, that's ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
I actually couldn't really work out how I'd managed to do it. It was just one of those days where everything just fell so well into place.
Yeah. So then how do you think the approach for the 100K race will go in comparison? You know, I guess if you look at that as D33 as the pinnacle performance so far, and, you know, starting sensibly and accelerating pretty rapidly and closing very quickly, how do you think that approach will play to how you'll tackle the 100K ACP and laps rather than out and back?
Yeah, it's a bit of a different beast at just about twice the distance. I think 100K is just about short enough that I think an even split is the way to go. Mm-hmm. So try and basically set out at my target pace and just maintain it all the way through. I know quite a few people who have gone out a bit harder in 100K and found the last 20 or so really, really tough and quite miserable. I think even splitting is probably the way to go about it.
Yeah, and I guess it's quite easy to, the format lends itself quite well to that, in that, okay, a lap, what, how far is a lap in the Irish course?
I think it's not been confirmed yet, but okay. I believe it's to be about 7 kilometres per lap.
Oh, right, quite long. That's quite long compared to what they do in Perth for the Scottish version. I think it's maybe 3 or 4K as a lap max.
I think it's an interesting one because the one just outside Dublin is going to be on a motor racing circuit.
Oh, awesome.
So there's a few different loops that they would use for motor racing depending on the event. Mm-hmm. And I think the 7 kilometers is actually going to be 2 or 3 smaller loops, one after the other. So it will actually be quite kind of short distances that you're passing the same point.
Are you doing, in your training, I just wonder, are you doing like any of your longer runs on loops just to kind of get used to the turning aspect? I know that's the thing with like when you're doing like track ultras, or I guess it's probably less of a big deal if you just got to do, you know, a single digit amount of loops on the road. Or are you thinking about that? Or
I've not really done any of that yet, but I do have planned, when I do one of the long runs at like 60 or 65 kilometers, I will be doing that on a loop of about the same kind of 7K, if possible, and just set up like a little table with drinks and gels and things.
Oh, nice. And then what, get your dad to like watch it so no one goes and nicks it or spikes it?
He has actually offered to do that, which I'm quite pleased with, given it'll be several hours.
You've talked a little bit about, obviously, like your breakthrough performances. Have you got any other kind of like highlights just from your running career? Just because it seems like, I know it's not quite this dramatic, but it seems like every couple of months I see that you've broken some course record, or I don't know, you've done something that makes everything else look pretty tame.
There's definitely a few that stand out. Probably the biggest non-ultra distance one was when I PB'd at half marathon at the start of 2020. That was down at London at the big half, and was just a couple of weeks before, you know, the pandemic took over the world. I'd had a really, really good couple of months of training. I'd focused a lot on a bit of speed work to try and get quicker at the shorter distances. Went down to London, and it's an incredible event. It's the British Championships half marathon as well, so it's an incredibly deep field. And you can kind of just get dragged along to an extent down there. So I ran 69.31 for over a minute off my PB. And that was another one that I just thought, I don't think I could have done anything better than how it went on that day.
And you made it on TV behind the lead women, did you not?
That's right,
I'm sure I was watching that on TV. I was like, that's the lead women. Wait, that's Jason just like 100 metres behind.
That race is brilliant if you're targeting somewhere around the 70-minute mark, because you've got, I mean, it's a who's who of the top elite British women racing down there, and they're all generally running about 70, 71 minutes or thereabouts. So about 5 or 6K into the race, going round Canary Wharf, Yeah, I passed the lead women's group and got about 3 minutes of primetime BBC coverage.
waving at the camera.
I remember all I was thinking actually during the race, I went past Samantha Harrison, who was leading at the time, and all I could think about was, don't trip her up. Whatever you do, don't trip her up.
That would look so bad.
Yeah.
Brilliant. What about your FKT last year?
Yeah, that was another one of those things that I hadn't really thought about it until only a month.
What's the full name of it?
It's the Deeside Way is the
Deeside Way,
the public footpath, and as you get towards Aberdeen from the west, it becomes the old Deeside Railway line, and that's what the D33 race is run on from Aberdeen to Banchory and back. And I was hoping in March of this year to go and race D33 again, if it was to happen, which it didn't in the end. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, I've been training really well. I'm feeling strong at this longer distance type thing. What can I do? And I know throughout 2020, you know, FKT was the phrase of the year, really, in the running world. Mm-hmm. Everyone was going out and doing some FKT or another. And I thought, well, I could try and just do the full Deeside Way, which is from Ballater to Aberdeen. It's 70 kilometers, so it's not massively further than the D33 race would be. And I knew one of my Metro Aberdeen clubmates, Brian Kinghorn, he had done it at the end of 2020, and he'd run it in about 6 hours dead, I think. And I kind of looked at that and thought, that might be quite an interesting one to try. Yeah, I'll give that a bash. I ended up doing it on the same day as D33 would have been.
Nice.
So it was, it was quite a nice substitute instead of being able to do that race.
And is that whole route, is that pretty much flat? Or what's the kind of elevate? What does that course look like?
It's more or less flat. It's about, across the full distance, I think it's about 180 metres net downhill. And there's only really two climbs on it. There's a climb at a place called Des Woods, which is about 24 kilometers in. And that climbs, it's only about 60 or 70 meters, something like that, over a K or two. And then there's one other climb at about halfway, which climbs probably about 100 meters over 3 or 4 K. And that's kind of it in terms of elevation. Other than that, it's pretty flat and plain sailing.
And what time did you drop on that?
I got to Duthie Park Gates, which is the finish, in 4 hours, 45 minutes and 46 seconds.
Yeah, that's a nice slice off the top, that, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was kind of run similarly to the way I did the D33 the year before, in that I did set out fairly conservatively and then got to about the halfway point and picked it up a bit. Got through the 50K point and thought, yeah, I still feel kind of okay. And then from 60K onwards, the last 10, it was starting to hurt and it was pretty hard going. But I was really, really pushing hard at that point. And there's my mate, Chris Cowley, he joined me on the bike for that last 10K because it can be quite busy with pedestrians. So
to clear the path.
Yeah, basically just to shout at people and letting them know that there was some lunatic about to come barreling past. And that helped massively. And he took a wee video with, I think it was about 2 kilometres to go. And I look and sound in a bad way.
And I trust that was all within the correct boundaries.
It was, yeah. I was a little bit anxious about that. I think it was about a week beforehand that things were relaxed slightly. I can't really remember exactly what it was, but it was all to do with the, you know, 5 miles within your local area boundary. So it did thankfully comply with that.
Cool. Good, good.
Well, yeah, so 4:45 for 70K, what would that equate to for an extra, you know, add on 30K, which would be what, maybe 2 hours? So, you know, are you looking to go sort of near 7 hour mark, or what's your expectations going into the 100?
Yeah, 7 hours is definitely the target. Try and get under that 7 hour mark. I think I'd be pretty confident of something in the kind of 7:10 range, but that big hour benchmark is just too enticing to not go for.
Yeah.
So yeah, that Deeside Way run was was quicker, but obviously there is that extra 30k chunk to add on to the end, which in which anything could happen, really.
Yeah, exactly. Dating it.
I can see in the background that you've got a few guitars, which I think just segues nicely. Obviously, you put in some pretty significant training weeks. I mean, how many hours are you spending a week training, just roughly?
Yeah, at the moment, it's about 12 to 12 and a half hours of running a week. So I'm trying to hit about 180 kilometers, which is about 112 miles for this kind of 8-week block, which, it does take up a lot of time.
Because you're working 40 odd hours a week too. I mean, what have you got any tips on how to balance that insane training load with a full-time job? Like, how are you managing that?
What I do quite a lot, in fact, most working days, I run from work straight afterwards. I know that I've tried in the past to walk home from work because I live pretty close, get changed and then head out the door. But I find that I struggle to be motivated to do that. And I think even that extra like 15 minutes of walking home and getting changed just takes more time out of your evening. So I generally tend to just bring shorts and a t-shirt into work, get changed, pop them in my little backpack and just run from work. And I'll do, so you get some hilarious routes because I live less than a kilometer from work. And I'll quite often do 20K on the way home. But I think that makes a huge difference. If I wasn't doing that, I would struggle a lot more to just get that mileage in per week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I guess as well, kind of over your sort of last, 5 years that you've been running, what are your kind of biggest kind of tips and learnings for people just in all facets of running, from kind of, I guess, beginners to sort of the challenges, people looking for that BQ and stuff?
Yeah, that's one thing you get asked quite a lot, obviously working day to day in the shop. And my view is that there is no substitute for mileage. It's obviously that's a gross oversimplification, but if you're running, you know, 30 miles a week, for example, and you're asking me what's the number one tip for getting quicker or getting fitter or being able to run longer, I'd say run 50 miles a week. Obviously, you need to build up to that, and you need to build up to that quite gradually. Otherwise, you're running the risk of injury. But pretty much every big increase in every big leap in performance I've had has come off the back of a couple of months where I've upped the training. And it's like, obviously, I do a good bit of speed work now and things like that as well. But I didn't for a couple of years when I started running. And I think if you're asking the question, should I do a couple of interval sessions a week or should I do an extra 15 miles of easy running a week? Do the extra 15 miles of easy running for sure, and you'll get better a lot quicker. Speed work's great, but I think it should always be like the icing on the cake. It shouldn't be the fundamentals of the cake. And the way to get faster for sure is to just run more.
But you can also put a good bit of icing if you cut a cake in half and put the icing in the middle as well as on the top.
As well as on the top, yeah, and then yeah. That's your two interval sessions a week.
Aye, exactly.
Yeah.
Nice baking metaphor there.
I didn't know where you were going, but that does make for a much better cake.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, yeah, all right.
Yeah, it does make for a much better cake, but then if the sponge is low quality, it doesn't matter what the icing is, it still won't be good.
Yeah, so your sponge analogies, then your aerobic base, then that you need to have a good foundation before you then start. Just
you guys have worked this metaphor to death.
Exactly, yeah.
It's done.
Have we overworked the dough?
Not in a. Oh man, I can tell you don't bake.
Of course I do. No, I don't. Just on volume, when you were talking about, I guess, people going from 30 miles to 50 miles or 50 miles to 60, 70, 80. Do you run 7 days a week at the moment?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I run every day, generally about 8 to 10 runs a week at the moment. So I'm doing doubling up 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. And doubling up on easier days as well, or?
Yeah, generally. I quite like to, like on a day when I'm doing a session in the evening, I quite like to get an easy run in that morning.
Yeah.
And then on like one of my off days from work, I like to do something like 15 miles at like midday, and then just an extra half hour or so in the evening.
Okay. So how would then you sort of recommend or advise people to adjust to the number of days per week that they are training, or, you know, if they are training a lot and 5 or 6 or 7 days, to progress to doubles? What tips have you kind of learned along the way from starting at 1,000 kilometers a year to running 4,000 kilometers in 6 months?
Yeah, one of the best ways I think to do it is to make use of like a down week every 3 or every 4. So if you're running 4 days a week and you're looking to maybe up it to 5 days a week, do that, you know, try that 1 week and then ease back to 4, and then maybe run 5 days for the next 2 weeks, and then you can drop back to 4 again, just give your body that little chance to recover. Even now when I'm in quite big training blocks, I like to have a kind of slightly lower week every 4 or every 5 weeks, just because like 5 weeks of big mileage, it does really fatigue you and you don't feel great all the time through it. So having just a slightly easier week is really nice, just to reset that a little bit. And I think that's applicable whatever level you're at, really. Mm-hmm. And if you're running 5 or 6 days a week and you want to up that even more, yeah, doubles are a great way to do it. So you can still have like 1 or 2 complete rest days, but just add in an extra, you know, 30 minutes or an extra hour, either in a morning or evening that you're already running.
How did you find that step going from running 5 or 6 days a week to running 7 days? Have you had any days off this year, or have you ran every day this year?
I've had 3 days off so far. Okay. This year. Yeah. Two of them were because I just had a little bit of a quad niggle, and it was sort of concerned me a little bit, and I thought, oh, best to just be sensible here. Took a couple of days off, and thankfully it didn't materialize into anything more than that. The other one was the other day off was actually, I'd been out the night before out for a few drinks with a few mates, and I just wasn't feeling it the next day. And I think sometimes it's important to not let like a run streak get the better of you. I'm sure if I'd really, really committed to it that day, I could have gone out and done 10K at quite an easy pace, but I don't think I'd have felt any better for it. And I don't think it would have given me any benefit. So yeah. I just thought, look, there's no point. Let's just forget about today and pick it up again tomorrow.
Yeah, I can certainly vouch for feeling worse after a run like that. It was the first time I was trying to attempt Markathon in December. So the challenge is to run a minimum of 5 kilometers for every day in December, and the Kansanis picked that month because of all the interruptions that you're susceptible to. And it was a work night out one night, and it was a 2:30 in the morning job getting home. I actually didn't get home. I stayed at Finlay, who was on episode 1's house, and I was like, I got up the next morning still blind drunk, and I was like, Markathon's on, I need to go for a run, and went for a half hour run along the Water Leith. But it's the strangest run, because, I mean, you know, when you start running, it's an automated skill and you don't think about it. I actually had to think about it because I felt like my right arm and right leg were swinging at the same time. So I was running like Pinocchio would walk, rather than alternating when you run. Obviously, when your left leg goes forward, your right arm's going forward and you're swinging like offset. And I was running along, I was like, got back from this run, 5K minimum that you had to do that day. And I was in a worse place than I started the morning at, so it wasn't.
I think that's how Billy Whiz from the Beano runs, isn't it?
he'd probably be going faster.
What a red that is.
But I mean, yeah, I don't know. If it was maybe psychological or not, but I had always been a bit cautious or avert to running 7 days a week. And I was very rarely, even the last couple of years, very rarely getting up to 100 plus miles a week, but would always do a double and have a day off. But I think, you know, since October, you know, pre-COVID, I used to have similar stats to that. I think before COVID hit me, I'd had 2 days off this year and had ran every day. It doesn't actually detriment you, providing that you're doing enough easy running. And I think what I like about it is that if you have a day off, the day after your day off, your legs normally feel absolutely gubbed because it's that cumulative fatigue that you're recognizing. Whereas if you keep running, you're running so easy a lot of the time that you're running that fatigue out your legs almost. So I'm a big fan of it now.
I totally agree with that. I think it's just about knowing your body yourself. I know, as you said there, if I take a day off, then the day after the day off, my legs will feel terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never quite understood that, but it's always seemed to happen. And I feel much better if I've done just like an easy 45 minutes or something like that than I do if I just take a complete day off.
I think it just keeps you dialed in without taking too much out of you, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But then there's definitely the risk, especially if you've got quite an addictive personality, that if you do, you know, if you hit 50 days without a day off, then you might start thinking, oh, I could probably get to 100. And then all of a sudden you're in what I think of as quite a dangerous spiral of going after the run streak. And I think then once you're kind of psychologically committed to, oh, I'm on a streak here, then if you do need a day off, you might not take it. And I think if you feel like you need that day off, take the day off.
Yeah, and don't get hung up on it. Yeah, I think that's a great message. And it's a key learning, because, you know, I think we all try and run through things or run off things and stuff like that. And it's, you actually just need to recognize it and say, there's actually probably a greater risk of doing harm that to yourself or your body or to get injury than there is not, you know, if you do nothing, you don't do anything.
I've had plenty of times when I have taken a full day off, and I'm sure other people can relate to this, but like in the evening and I haven't run, and I get this weird sort of psychological and I'm going, but you could just go out and do like half an hour. And then the other part of me is going, but you don't need to. It's not going to benefit you. It might make you feel worse. And then you have this, this weird back and forth, and you get quite frustrated with yourself. But then quite often you'll wake up the next day, you'll go out and run, and you'll think, I'm quite glad I took that rest day.
Yeah. And I think it's also having the discipline within yourself to and that focus on the end goal. You know, so if the end goal is a Scotland debut or whatever kind of race that you're doing, then the run streak's the byproduct of consistent training towards that goal. It's not the focus on the run streak. I guess if the focus is on the run streak and you've got niggles, then you have to soldier on. But, you know, you don't lose sight of the main focus or your main motivation or driver for performance.
When I got the call for the Scotland selection, obviously, that's what I've been working towards for quite a few months, or the best part of a year. And that was a fantastic feeling. But pretty much as soon as I kind of came down off that high, I was thinking, okay, well, what's the next target? The next target's getting to the start line.
Yeah.
And that's my, you know, A goal at the moment. It's not even worrying about the race necessarily. It's let's get there. And if not taking a day off is going to be harmful to the prospect of getting to that start line healthy, then it's not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And if taking a day off is going to get me there with one fewer niggle or whatever else, then I'm sure as hell taking the day off.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a great message.
That call-up for the Scotland Fest, I was just a little bit curious about the process. Did it just kind of come out of the blue like a letter to Hogwarts? Or did you submit like a body of work?
I think they do it differently depending on what like event it's for, whether it's like for hill running or ultras or whatever. For the ACP 100K, the Scottish Athletics basically put out a message on social channels saying we're now taking notifications of interest for this. And then they say that the standard is you must have run or be deemed capable of running 7 hours, 45 minutes for 100K. And it's kind of, as you said there, Chris, it's basically, you know, send us an application and justify yourself pretty much.
What body of work did you submit?
Stop
what was your,
using
what was your
that
resume?
Metaphor. It's awful. I just think that Jason's going to submit his actual body to Adrian in the UK athletics people. Saying,
I saw,
here's my body of work.
I saw how you reacted the first time I said it, and I thought, I'm going to do that again.
Here's my body, UK athletics. See if I can, if I'm capable of running 7:45.
Yeah, I sent him a
CV.
Photo of my body.
It's a running CV, not a body of work.
Yeah, it's a running CV is probably the best way to put it. Yeah, I basically said I kind of talked about my D33 race as the main one, and then the issue with, obviously, the COVID situation and pretty much all races being cancelled, was there wasn't really a way of, or for a lot of people, of kind of proving fitness. And I think that's where the Deicideway FKT run really played into my hands quite well, because that was basically a demonstration that, look, I had a good start of 2020 before everything got cancelled, but I've got this to show that I've trained well over winter and I'm in good shape at the moment. And I think that might have been quite difficult to do without that.
Okay, so should we move on to quick fire questions, or have you got anything else? Well,
I was just going to ask if you've been training much with Chris Richardson. I guess you guys are both based in Aberdeen and both got a call up to the team. Have you guys been running together, or is it quite sort of amicable? I think, you know, both of you getting Scotland call up, and how both of you have been running in the last sort of year especially is pretty phenomenal. So it's great for the Northeast. And I think it's, you know, I was thinking back to your comment earlier where you say, well, you join a club and you run against better runners. I think when you get to your level where you're at now, those better runners become fewer and far between. So it's then trying to find people that you can train with specifically. And have you guys been running much together, or?
Yeah, we do the occasional session and things together. I think at Metro Aberdeen, which is my current club, like you say there, you know, you get to a level where it's difficult to find people better than you. And I think the way I look at it there is, maybe to an extent, but with the kind of depth of quality that there is in that men's squad at Metro, of people doing a whole bunch of different disciplines, whether it's ultras or 10Ks or hill runners, there's a lot of guys who are certainly faster than me, like on sessions, if you're doing mile reps or things like that. And then, as you said there, with Chris being in the Scotland team as well, he's an absolute marathon beast, and he'd smash me over a marathon distance. So there's guys there that, yeah, just from a kind of range of running backgrounds, that can really still drag you around a hard session, especially if you're not feeling good. But yeah, having Chris in the team is fantastic as well. I was really, really pleased when the squad was actually announced to see his name there. His first ultra was one of the few races that happened in autumn 2020 at Speyside Way Ultra, where he comprehensively beat me. And then he ran a brilliant marathon in March. So I was fairly sure that he'd probably be in the team. And yeah, it was great to see when it was announced.
Yeah, because that Speyside race, you both were under the course record time, weren't you?
Oh, he was under it. I was about 2 minutes over it.
Oh, was it? Was it close?
It was all thereabouts. He was about, I think he was seven or eight minutes quicker than I was.
Mm. Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see how it all comes together on the day of the event as well. I think the Scotland team's stronger than it's been for, you know, years. It's got some real speed in it, you know, rather than ultra specialists, which is really exciting. You know, seeing people that are running, yeah, sub 2:30 for the marathon, and, you know, really going after it, it'll be great to watch.
Yeah, and I know Chris's target for the race is going to be sub 7 hours as well, so I'm sure it'll probably transpire that actually on the day we'll probably run a fair chunk of it.
And then I guess the last question I had on that kind of format, you know, fast forward from the Anglo-Celtic plate, if that goes well and you enjoy the format, would you apply to go to Centurion Track 100 or something similar to that?
Possibly, yeah. I think at the moment anyway, I definitely prefer, or I think I'm probably better at the kind of shorter distance ultras.
Okay.
I know that's quite a strange phrase to use, but yeah, the kind of 50K up to a sort of upper limit almost of 100K is, I think, what I'm probably best at. But definitely in the future, yeah, something like 100 miler on a track, yeah, it's definitely on the radar.
Hmm. I guess the appeal of that event is that it's an invitational that is similar to getting a Scotland vest for ACP. You apply and you get sort of vetted against the talent, and you run in a small field that's, you know, driving the sharp end. And like you saw this year, it was world record performance from, was it Sirok? What was his name? Forget his name. Lithuanian guy. Andrei Sorokin or something like that, I want to say. Never mind. So yeah, no, that'd be cool. But it's, yeah, I guess it's quite interesting because I think 100K or less, the focus is still on speed for, you know,
yeah.
I mean, the performance end, we were talking about Western States in the intro, and, you know, the performance end of Western States is very much focused on speed as well. But I think when you get to 100 miles, the speed becomes much slower and much more relative.
Sania Sorokin.
Sorokin, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a distance kind of cut off where if you're racing above that distance, you're expecting to slow down at some point. And I think 100 miles, well, 100 miles for almost everyone on the planet, you're not going to be even splitting or getting quicker throughout. No. I know Zach Bitter's old 100 mile world record, he did actually negative split by about 30 seconds. So his second 50 miles fractionally faster. I don't know about...
I think that's even splitting it.
But I think that, I mean, that's definitely the exception for 100 miles.
Yeah.
But I think 100K, I think you probably find that most people at a really high level even split that more often than not.
Mm-hmm. No, it'll be great to watch how it all unfolds. So yeah, that's good.
Right, so I guess moving on to our quickfire questions now. Jason, where's your favourite place to run?
My favourite place to run, without a doubt, is Fetherezzle Forest. That's an enormous expanse of forest. It's about 6 miles west of Stonehaven. So kind of between Stonehaven and the Cairnaugh Mount Road. There's so many wide forestry tracks. There's loads of single tracks and things there as well. One of my mates, Chris Cowley, I do a lot of long runs in the forest with him. And you can pretty much do a loop of like whatever distance you want without having to do any repetitions, any double backs, anything like that. I'm sure there's well over 100 miles of trail in that forest. I've actually recently mapped out a 100K route, which has no crossovers, no repeated sections, and no double backs. And it's all entirely contained within the forest. So it's massive, and it's a bit of a trail running paradise for me.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I mean, the race that Chris puts on, the Fetherezzle Forest Marathon, such a great route as well. But I think the first couple of times I was in the forest and ran there quite a bit, it feels vast even though you're in it. You know, you could run on the same path. It looks quite similar in a lot of different places, but you just feel like you're surrounded by trees. It's quite a dense sort of feeling, you know. There's so much space, but it's like, I don't know how to describe it really, because there's so many paths and there's so many options that it's so easy to get lost in what's...
Yeah, it can be quite disorientating if you don't really know it very well. My first experience of running in Fetherezzle Forest was, it was doing a 9 mile run from Stonehaven. The actual forest section was only supposed to be about 3 miles, but I took a wrong turn and it ended up being an 18 mile run. And but like once I actually found a way out of the forest, because I didn't have a map or anything, which was pretty daft at the time, to be fair. Once I actually found my way out of the forest onto a road, I kind of looked around and worked out where I was. And I was like, oh, I'm about...
It's Mount Keen.
I was like, I'm about 8 miles from Stonehaven. How did I get here?
It's weird because I think I've ran that marathon route maybe 3 or 4 times now, and I still don't think I could run it without nav or without like the course being marked or anything. I think I could probably blag the first couple of turns, but I don't think I could run it all and know the directions that confidently, despite having run it 3 or 4 times. And I think that probably sums up how much trail and quality running there is to offer at Federeso, but how bloody disorientating is the right word to use, because it's like, where the hell am I?
Yeah, and I've got to the point now, because I've spent so much time in there, and after that first experience, you know, I've spent a lot of time in there actually with a map or with some kind of GPS track to follow on a watch, that I now do know it pretty much like the back of my hand, and it's great. It's, yeah, such nice running in there.
Favourite post-race meal and beverage to wash it down with?
Oh, it's exactly what I mentioned earlier, pizza and beer. Without a doubt, that's...
What are your toppings?
Oh, it depends if I'm at home after the race or if I'm away somewhere.
There are no limitations. You can have whatever pizza you want.
Okay, I'll tell you exactly what it is then. It is a pepperoni, beef and Donner pizza from Majestic Takeaway in Stonehaven.
Donner on a pizza.
Oh, that sounds class.
Absolutely outstanding. There's a guy called Sammy who's a Moroccan chap, runs that takeaway, and I've known him for years, and he makes absolutely banging pizzas.
And what beer are you pairing that with?
Oh, it's got to be Tennent's. The only Jesus. Beer worth drinking.
Oh man, okay. Dream race to win.
We're just glossing over that one, are we?
I've got nothing to add. you've made your bet.
What was that? Sorry, dream race to win.
Yeah.
At the moment, it would be the 2021 Anglo-Celtic Plate 100K. I think in a wider sense, Western States, like you mentioned, would probably be up there. That would be just absolutely incredible. I mean, that's, you know, more or less a kind of world championship of runnable long ultras with the depth of field that they get there. Something like that. Yeah, definitely.
And what's your predictions for Saturday for the men's and the women's fields?
Ooh, I'm going to say, I think Jared Hazen for the win to beat Walmsley. On the women's side, Beth Pascal.
Told you, Chris.
Is that
Jason saying it doesn't mean it's happened.
It's just we're the brains of the operation. You just need to
trust Jason in the majority. Are not the brains of anything.
I think with Jared in that race, he's flown quite under the radar the last couple of times he's done it. I mean, let's not forget, last time he ran it, I think he was under the previous course record, but he lost out to Jim Walmsley. And then your likes of Beth Pascal, her Bob Graham last year was absolutely phenomenal. And I think she's just going to be in outrageous form.
I pretty much agree with you guys, but I just think Jim's going to put it together.
He's a cyclist. Jim be better at the Tour de France, telling you.
Man, you've all forgotten. No, also, I just want to hear the word three-peat thrown around as well.
The what?
The word three-peat. I love the word three-peat. It's great. So I'd like to hear that used. Will we see sub 14?
I was just about to say, yeah, forget the winner. Will we see sub 14? I don't think so.
I don't think
absolutely
so this year.
Not. No. Nah. I mean, you believe in something, but nah, I don't think so.
It's so conditions dependent as well.
It looks like it's going to be hot too. I'm sure about a week ago the forecast was it was going to be an absolute scorcher.
Yeah, I know the women's course record there was set on an unprecedentedly cold year.
It's 2012 when Ellie Greenwood and Timmy Olsen both broke the records. Final question, Jason. If you could be a big hitter in any other sport, what would it be and why?
That's such a tough question because...
It's a good addition, by the way, Chris. Kudos for that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't...
Thanks. A rare compliment from Mr. Stewart. Thank you very much.
We've just missed so many other people that we could have asked that question to.
It's an organic process.
Mm. I mean, the obvious and boring answer is football because you'd be raking in the cash. But I think in reality, if you're going to be a big hitter in any sport, I'm quite into watching a lot of rock climbing at the moment.
Like bouldering
bouldering and kind of lead in sport as well.
Okay. I think
the inclusion of climbing at the Olympics this year, I'm a big fan of. like I follow a load of climbers like Shauna Coxey, top GB boulderer on Instagram, and I find some of the like the combination of strength and outrageously good technique that some of these guys and girls have is just unbelievable. I think that would be awesome to be good at.
That's a really good answer. I enjoyed that.
Would you go free solo though? Would you do an Alex Honnold?
Yeah, I mean that's a whole different ballgame. no is the answer, obviously.
My hands have never been sweatier watching that in the cinema. It was that film is just boggles my mind.
But it's so an unbelievable tense. Watch, but he is properly unhinged.
Yeah.
The size of his hands is what boggles my mind. Have you seen like his hands next to his head? Just massive.
I think one thing about climbers is like, well, I mean, me as a runner and probably most runners, we don't exactly have a lot of upper body strength. But seeing what some of these top climbers can do, you know, one-armed pull-ups on a half-centimeter crimp hold is just unbelievable.
How would you answer your own question, Chris?
Oh, okay.
Not that you're a big hitter in running, so maybe you just pick running, but...
Oh man, I don't know. Oh, next episode, I'll come up with an answer. I thought I knew, but I obviously don't because I've just thought, okay, well, what about you? Let me vamp for time.
I can predict Will's.
Go on.
Formula One.
Absolutely.
Oh, jeez.
The absolute pinnacle of driving and, yeah, superb.
Is that because the winner is just the person with the best car?
I mean, I would. Even if you talk big hitters, I would take a seat at Williams or Haas just to experience driving and performing in a 20 car race around some of those tracks, even in not the best car. I wouldn't need to be in a Mercedes or a Red Bull. I think put me in any of the sort of mid pack or even the lower spec ones, even Formula 2 or Formula 3. That's just every day.
Just anything that you can do while sitting down.
Anything that involves speed, but doesn't rely on my body. Chris, do you want to share the experience of driving in the Lake District? That is a pretty entertaining story.
So was this when I kind of didn't quite understand the crack with the road marking?
Chris was having a panic attack.
There was a road, right, where... It looked, I didn't see the sign before that said that we'd moved into like kind of dual carriageway rules. I thought we were still on a two lane kind of road. And then Wills just starts to overtake on a blind corner. And I was like, what are you doing? Stop. What are you doing? Like, and he was just like, what? And like, you take some, I don't know, you're not the most dangerous driver I've been in the passenger seat of, but I don't know. I really thought you'd lost your mind.
Well, if that wasn't dual carriageway road, then that would have been suicidal in terms of driving like that. But the fact that it was dual carriageway, there everyone's going in the same direction. There's not someone coming the other way. Hopefully.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't see the sign.
This was just
very entertaining.
Will thinks he's Lewis Hamilton and he's just going for it.
Sebastian Vettel, please. Have we stalled enough time? Or are you still flaking around the subject?
Honestly, next week. We'll ask the question again next week. Just give me some time. I don't want to commit. I hadn't thought about it. I added it in at the last minute. All right. Jason, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us. It's been really good kind of like getting sort of the front to back of like your kind of running journey so far. And really excited to see how you get on at the Anglo-Celtic Plate with that deep field. And I've literally just thought of a last question. What were you like at school sports day? Like when you were like a little boy? Like were you like good or was there any kind of...
I would say I was top half. There was always guys...
In a class of 30.
Yeah, there was always guys who were beating me at pretty much everything. I might sneak the odd... bronze, silver, or gold in the sack race or something, but no, I was...
You actually had the sack race?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a school sports day without it?
It's a staple.
We had a bit of egg and spoon action, but I don't remember the sack race. And the three-legged race, that was silly.
Yeah, that was a bit silly. Yeah. The egg and spoon race, though, you seem like one of those people that would have just held the egg on with your thumb, were you, Chris?
Me? I'm an honourable man. I was an absolute weapon at egg and spoon because I played a lot of tennis as a kid, so my hand-eye coordination is pretty phenomenal. Yeah, if you wanted to know.
And you wouldn't pick tennis as your sport?
Well, potentially.
I think tennis is one of those sports that, just for all-round physicality, is pretty impressive.
It is now. It is nowadays. It wasn't like, I don't know, you go back to the golden era of Pete Sampras and Tim Henman.
Are you and it was a little Pete bit Sampras more about finesse. An athlete? Pete Sampras.
No,
an
but no, but like, no, Pete Sampras was an absolute.
You
beast,
also can't
but
put
like,
Pete Sampras and Tim Henman in the same sentence.
Oh yes, you can.
No, you can't. Tim Henman was not that.
Don't
good.
Be very careful because I've still got Henmania. Don't you say anything bad about Tim Henman.
Oh dear.
Right, anyway, before we got derailed there, yeah, it's been great chatting to you, Jason. All the best at the Anglo-Celtic Plate, and yeah, see how it unfolds.
Yeah, man, go smash it.
I've been an avid listener since episode one, so it's great to finally be asked to get on.
One of the few. Nice one, yeah, hope the big block goes well, and yeah, go smash the Anglo ACP for Scotland. It'll be great to watch how it goes.
Awesome.
Thanks very much, guys.
Nice one. Cheers, Jason.
Take care, Jason.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye.
See you next week.